Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Shut your face. We speak the truth here. We only like to talk about the truth. Real life. Nitty gritty shit. Okay? We don't like lies. We don't like liars. We like the real deal. And we also talk to some really cool people. So thanks for listening. Check us out on our Patreon. And hit that follow button.
I'm Brianna and you're Adam.
I am.
Yes, ma'am. I was talking to you on your Saddle House page, and I was like, I didn't know who I was talking to, but I had an idea, I just wasn't sure.
Right.
It's never good to assume. So we'll just get on into it. How long have you been doing this?
Since 2014, I want to say, is when we started the Saddle House. And it just started with one saddle in my spare bedroom and kind of grew from there. But I've always been in horses ever since, like, 10 or 12 years old.
Yeah.
My parents had nothing to do with it, but they were supportive. And they toted me to the barn every day and hung out, helped clean stalls. They foot the bill for me to horse show for a long time. And so it was kind of just a natural fit, always being involved in the horses. And it just started to where I just wanted some nicer stuff for myself, and then it kind of grew to where I could support my horse habit, and it's kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. I was fixing to say, it just combined your love for showing and selling together. Right. What saddle did you start off with?
Ooh. Well, my first saddle, when I was a kid, I bought it off the internet for like $275, and that was brand new, so it was pretty cheap.
Oh wow. But did it last you a long time?
It might have needed some repairs. No, it didn't last very long.
Oh.
And then I think I saved up and bought like a Textan show saddle, and then sold that and moved into the cow horses and cutters and stuff like that. So
now, do you only particularly provide for that genre, that discipline, or do you also do across the board, right?
Not so much. Like I focus on the cow horse and the versatility. We do some stuff for the cutters and some reiners, but our bread and butter is definitely the cow horse and the versatility world and the ranch rider.
So do you have no desire to get into pleasure and English and any of that?
Zero interest. Zero interest. So we sold some barrel saddles for a little time, and I had a girl that was into it that was working for us, and she was great at it, but that is not my cup of tea, so I just stick to what I like.
Yeah, nope, I don't blame you there. Yeah. Now you show too, right? I didn't know this. I didn't think you showed.
I do, yes ma'am. I grew up showing Arabian Western pleasure horses, and then went to college. That wasn't really cool out in West Texas, so we switched to the versatility stock horse of Texas, and then I got into the rain cow horses after that.
So you like the rain cow horses?
Yeah, that's kind of what keeps me excited and doing what we do.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, when you first started, you said you started while you were with your parents. How long do you think it took you? Was it a gradual growth for you, or did just it kind of happen overnight?
Business-wise, yeah. Or passion for horses?
Business.
Oh, business, I did that all on my own. My mom loaned me $5,000, and she still tries to collect her interest on it. So they gave me that. They've always been real supportive, but it's always been my own deal. My dad will help me a lot, just driving back and forth and stuff like that. But no, it's just been me. And in the beginning days, my wife was a teacher, and everything I made off selling saddles, we put back into buying more saddles. And now she's a stay-at-home mom, and we just live off of Saddle House income.
Yeah, no, I don't blame her at all. You couldn't pay me enough money to be a teacher.
Yeah.
So, God bless that. Now, does she ride or no?
No, not at all. Like, once or twice a year, I'll get her on a horse. And that's about it.
My mom, growing up, my mom never rode. My dad loved horses. And so, me and my sisters kind of rolled into that. And it's funny because the most I ever learned about horses was from my mom, who knew nothing about horses.
Right.
Because you can kind of tell, you know, I was talking about it earlier with the lady. The horse business is a people business.
Right.
It's not really about horses.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's about people. So the more you learn about people and general things, it can help you. Anyways, right. So have you always been in Texas?
Always. I originally grew up in Plano, which is in the Dallas area, and then went to school in Lubbock, which is West Texas, and then got married, and I'm down here about an hour west of Houston right now.
Very cool. So you've been in the heart of it most of your life. You've never experienced anything outside of Texas.
Right. I mean, down here by Houston, it feels like we're not in horse country, but I kind of grew up in that area.
Yeah. Because Texas is different in the horse industry compared to everything else.
I think so. Yeah, that's what I hear.
No, it is. Like, you're right there. You can go ahead and agree with it. It's a whole nother ballgame. Like, you know, shows here, I'm in North Carolina, we're on the East Coast, so shows here are not nowhere near what shows are out there. Like, people flock to go to Texas to where it's at. So that worked out well for you. Did you see that happening, or have you ever thought about leaving Texas, or no?
No, if anything, I'd like to get a little bit closer to Fort Worth, but we've just got a lot going on down here where we live as far as family and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I understand. What was it, APHA, they literally moved like 7 miles from their old building to the stockyards. And I believe Kurt said it increased their revenue, like, or increased their views and stuff by the millions.
Yeah.
Like, not a little bit, but a lot.
I'm pretty confident we could kill it up there, but I can't convince my wife that's the right play. So here we are. But it kind of worked out good for me when I started, because a little further south where we are, there's not a lot of competition. There's not very many good places to get some nicer horse gear.
Yeah.
And there'd be a lot more competition up north. Now I'm very confident I could hold my own, but in the beginning it would have been a struggle.
Now, do y'all travel to shows? You do, because you mentioned something about a booth.
Yeah, we spend most of our time on the road. We go Las Vegas, run for the Million, Scottsdale for the Cow Horse Derby, Sun Circuit. We probably spend 2 or 3 months a year in Fort Worth, and then we'll hit up some other good shows, kind of scattered around. But I try to keep it Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, Nevada.
Yeah, because that's where the heart of it's at. Like,
right.
Now, Florida, have you considered going to Florida? Because there's a lot of cow horses in Florida.
I've thought about it. We've tried some a couple years ago in Georgia and Florida, and it didn't quite hit for the amount of effort that I want to be putting into stuff.
So you're just used to Texas.
I like it. Texas is good to us. I feel like in Texas, the places I'm going, people are looking for nicer stuff. And they don't mind paying for higher end stuff, where if we go other places, people aren't necessarily used to the quality of stuff that I like to tote around.
I think it's more the economics.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably.
It's not necessarily that, because you have people that would pay it here, but there's no point in them paying it here because you don't have the quality of shows and stuff here. That's why I keep saying, like, people flock to Texas. Like,
yeah.
Being in Texas probably helps you 75%, if not more than that.
Well, most of our business is internet/Facebook and traveling now, so I feel like we could do okay wherever we are, but it just makes life easier being closer to the shows.
Yeah, absolutely. Because a lot of people end up doing that if you want to succeed in this career, in this industry, in any format of it. You would need to go to where it's all at.
Right.
Because there's California's flocking in cow horse and rain cow horse. But who's going to drive from Texas to California? Like, you'd lose your money once you hit Nevada. regardless of what you sold. So, you know, the economics of it is something we've talked about a lot. You know, the horse industry is huge but small, and it's really hard to cater outside of Texas because you've got great horses. You've got big money outside of Texas. It's just really, really small compared to Texas being, you know, bigger. But I guess it is what it is. Did you see a change as far as Yellowstone is concerned and the TV show? Did you think that affect your business at all?
Like 10,000%. Like, Yellowstone has been phenomenal for us. You know, what Taylor's doing with Run for the Million, The Last Cowboy, what Teton's doing, the American Performance Horseman, I feel like all that has helped a lot. The rope horse stuff has really helped our cow horse market, especially. Like, these horses are selling so strong, it's not the best time to try to buy one right now, but it's helped a lot. I was talking to some friends in Fort Worth a while ago, and I was a little nervous about Yellowstone being done and hoping there's not a downtick in the horse market as a result of that.
And what did they say?
They think there's enough momentum going on. So this particular guy I was talking to, he works for Teton Ridge. He is in charge of the American Performance Horseman, and he feels like they've got so much other stuff, new markets, new media outlets going on, that they think it'll stay pretty strong.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all hope so, because it's just like a lot of people started their livelihoods based off of that upswing. You know, there was a lot of people in 2020. I mean, you can attest to this. There was a lot of people in 2020 and 2021 that started businesses based off of the upswing of the horse industry, and now some of them are not around because it is going down.
Yeah. You know, I mean, back then you couldn't, I mean, everybody was at least a year out on saddle orders, if not longer. You just struggled to get materials, but the demand was just so high for everything. It was like a struggle to keep saddles in stock to be able to sell them or go places with enough inventory. Whereas now that's kind of slowed down. I've kind of seen a lot of the vendors have dropped off or stopped going as many places. But I kind of feel like, you know, we're growing and growing, but I'm seeing the other people not being able to keep up.
Yeah, of course. Now, do you your own brand of tack too, or you just resell other brands?
So we have our saddle line, which is probably 90% of what we sell is our Saddle House custom saddle line.
Oh, cool.
We do make strap goods, some strap goods here in-house as far as like head stalls, breast collars, stuff like that. But I'm kind of known for, on the tack side, carrying higher-end handmade stuff from the best makers in the business. And that's kind of what separates us. So, like, it's not going to your normal feed store where it's just mass-produced stuff and everybody's got the same stuff. That doesn't excite me. I like the one-off, handmade, made-in-America type stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a business thing. Every business gets to that decision where it's like, okay, are we going to stay here or are we going to go here? You know.
Right. Yeah, the struggle for me is I used to go in these other big, well-known tack stores, and I'm just like, there's nothing good here. It's all mass-produced, you know, made overseas type stuff. And just from a business standpoint, it's so hard to be able to get that much inventory that's made in America and handmade. Like, it's very hard to keep up.
Yeah. It's...
And if you can get it, you're not making money on it. That's for, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm all for made in America, but we don't want to get into politics because Americans don't work. They don't. I mean, you know, it's like you can't compete with something that's doing better than you. So, you know, it's just that's a whole world of, we ain't trying to get into politics and that kind of stuff. Because I support American made, absolutely. But if you can get the same thing better somewhere else, that's not my problem. That's their problem, you know. So I support both because we sell both. It just is what it is, because if you didn't have the bigger guys and now your little guys are out of business,
right? So, yeah, that's kind of,
you know, you can't downside one and upside the other. You need both, especially in the industry. Because you also have people that are brand new. You know, I remember, like you, your $200 saddle. Could you afford a $5,000, $6,000 Don Rich when you first got started?
Right.
No, exactly. So you got to have levels to go up. You know, so that stuff, it caters to certain markets. It just, it is what it is. You know, you have to have each market.
Yeah. So we'll have some, I would say it's good quality, but it's lower end. You know, it might be Amish made or made somewhere, just more entry level stuff. And then we have everything going up to, you know, really, really expensive stuff. And so I try to have something for everybody, but it's got to be good quality stuff still, whether it's made here overseas, because there is a place for that. You know, not everybody wants to buy a $5,000 or $10,000 bit, you know.
So exactly. Exactly.
I'll have something ranging from 50 or whatever less on up to as much as somebody wants to spend.
Yeah. Like I just got through talking to a racing horse trainer. She basically uses snaffles and these horses are worth $50,000, $60,000, $100,000.
Right.
So it's like, it's just, it's, you can't, you know, downplay this and upplay that. It just, it is what it is. But back to the actual saddle house. So have you guys always been in the same location or did you have to grow as your business grew?
Well, it started out in a spare bedroom, then it filled up my garage, and then it went to a small, it was a kind of neat cottage building, and that was all just me, and I really loved it. Like, I would just go to, I'd work on saddles in the morning, clean up used saddles, trade-ins and stuff like that, and
oh, cool.
I'd just Crocs and gym shorts and sweat it out every day, and, in the afternoon, I'd just go lay on the couch with my cell phone and sell them on Facebook, and that's what I did for a long time.
Yeah.
And then after that, we moved into a bigger, it was a really nice building, but it, we kind of started doing a little more in-store retail. Before that, I was just mobile, just had the trailer, and then the Facebook. But now we've got a pretty good-sized building, and it's all out 10,000 square feet full of very nice stuff.
That's cool. That's really cool. I was going to ask you something else about the mobile unit versus, I think the mobile unit came in handy. Well, let me back up. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 41, and I remember when Facebook first started coming around. The ability to sell stuff on Facebook within the last probably 4 or 5 years has been a game changer for a lot of people. Like, you would not be able to do numbers or do half of the stuff people have done, not just you, but anybody in any business, without social media. Even now, TikTok, like, people sell on TikTok like crazy. Do you think that that is going to change, or do you think that COVID was a kind of push for that?
It's been interesting for me. Like, when I started, people selling Facebook, selling saddles on Facebook was relatively new. There was really only one or two other people doing it, you know, selling a number of them. And I think I just got started at the right time to where I was able to, like, really hustle and move a lot of them. But now there's so many scammers out there, it's so hard for people. Like, we talk to people every day that get burned or scammed on a saddle deal. So I've kind of tried to transition my business from people messaging me on Facebook, trying to order off Facebook, to just shopping directly off the website. Back in the beginning, I didn't have the help to be able to keep the website up to date like we do now. But I feel like it streamlines the process, makes it a little bit easier on me and the customer. You know, we're still there to talk to people and help them out on Facebook. And I still post all the new exciting stuff on there. It's, you know, it's just good advertising, good social media. But 2 years ago, I think my Facebook got hacked, and that kind of was a punch in the gut. Like 10 years of business and conversations and people's orders was all lost. And
oh, that sucks.
So I kind of had to just change how I was doing some stuff.
Oh, that sucks bad. They couldn't do nothing for you.
It was the worst. I like, no, they never got it back. They hacked my business and my business and my personal page. So they recovered the business page, but they couldn't recover my personal page.
But you can't have business without personal.
I don't know.
I'm telling you that. Like Facebook, you have to have a personal page to have a business page. So that's weird as hell that they got your business but not your personal.
No, well, Facebook got back my business page. They couldn't get back my personal page, so they didn't have anybody to give the business page to.
Yeah.
So it was a nightmare. I spent like a year trying to recover it. Finally just gave up, but it was a sad deal. Once I figured out it got hacked, like I was so sick, I immediately went through up. Like it ruined my life for a little while.
Yeah, that sucks pretty bad. Yeah. I can't imagine that. You got to be careful with emails and links and stuff like that. It happens to everybody. Now, as far as your goals for the business, are you wanting to get rid of your mobile unit and have everybody just come to your store? Or what are some of your goals for the next year or 5 years?
No, I love traveling. I love going to shows, seeing the people, seeing the horses. And that's where all of our customers are. So if anything, I'd like to kind of expand what we're doing on the road. You know, I've got a second trailer, second or third truck. But like to go down the road a little bit more. It's just hard to be able to do that without wearing all your help out, because you can only do it for so long. It's exhausting after a while. But I love it. I don't know if everybody else loves it as much as I do. But do that. I long term like to get a little bit further up north. Just I could go to horse shows in Fort Worth during the day and be home at night, see the kids and stuff like that. So. Yeah. But other than that, just surviving the day-to-day, growing the brand. I do a lot lately with the makers. We've been hosting some maker showcases and some gear contests. So I spend a lot of time working and growing that. But
a lot of that stuff is art.
Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff's like very, not to say you can't use it, but it's just like, you know, if I had one, I probably wouldn't use it. I would just display it. You know, a lot of those pieces, I think I saw a little bit about the bits and stuff that you're talking about. Like, those are art pieces. Like, they are, like, really nice.
For sure. Yeah, there's, it depends who you talk to. I feel like maybe half the people that bought bits out of our contest were going to use them, and half were just going to put them on display and hang them up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's an exciting deal. Those bits sold really, really well, so... That's exciting for the makers.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good idea. That's great. I think that's wonderful. It's one of those things where I would just probably not use it. I'd be like, don't touch it. Anyways, we used to do vendor stuff like that. I used to go set up and do shows. And I'm going to tell you something. The whole setup and breakdown process will wear you out. Like, absolutely wear you out. But it is worth it, because nothing kind of beats face-to-face.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've had a lot of situations on Facebook, you know, with messages and talking to people, because you don't have a context. You don't have an emotional context with the conversation. So being face-to-face is a good thing for any business to try to, you know, sustain itself or build itself.
Yeah. So much of what we do, people need to touch it, sit in it, try it on their horse, feel it. You know, they can only get so much off the internet or off Facebook. Being able to get in front of our customers is phenomenal for us.
Now, what's the range of brands that you guys carry?
So on the saddle line, we've got our Saddle House brand. I carry the Martins too. I'll sell some Trent Ward rope saddles. We'll sell a couple Paul Taylor barrel saddles just to have a little bit of an entry-level deal for people. And then as far as the tack stuff, we've got a lot of handmade maker stuff. But that stuff, I might only be getting one piece at a time or one or two pieces a year from people. More of the bigger lines, we'll have your Kerry Kelly, Brandon Anthony, Troy Flaherty. Let's see. Trying to look out there. I've got a girl in California that makes some amazing shops for us, Barlin, Caitlin Hoffman. We got the classic equine. We got some Pro Choice, Iconoclast boots. And then, let's see, we've got a bunch of different saddle blanket lines that we carry as well.
Yeah. What's the number one tip for people when they're buying a saddle?
Make sure you don't get scammed on Facebook would be my number one thing. buy from a reputable source, because if it doesn't
work out... No. Actually buying the saddle when you're looking at one. Because, you know, there's one thing, I think it's like cars, maybe. It's one thing to say, okay, well, you can buy this saddle, it's going to be great, you're going to love it, versus does it fit your horse? Is it going to last? Is it, what's it made out of? What are you going to use it for? Where are you going to use it at? Like, what's your number one tip when somebody comes in and goes, hey, I got a cow horse, I do reined cow, I'm brand new, what do you think I should buy?
Well, that's first thing we figure out is what they're doing with it, what they're going to use it for. And then I would say probably seat size and find something they're comfortable in. So sitting enough of them to where you know you're comfortable in that saddle, what you think you'd get along with.
Yeah. That's just something you can't bypass. Like saddles, you need to pick it up. You need to sit in it. Like it's just...
Yeah. On the saddles, you get what you pay for. So I often recommend, like, stick with the well-known brands, stick with the well-known retailers or sellers, because if it doesn't work out with somebody like us or a bigger tack store, I can swap you out of it or get you into something different. And so if you don't get the right one the first time, like, there's options, but there's a lot of places where that's not the case.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with that for sure. Now, what about brand new makers?
Saddle wise or gear tack or
in general?
Ooh,
because you seem to be naming everybody that's already established, but they're gonna die at some point in time. What about the younger guys?
I'm gonna leave somebody out. I can't do that. Man, like just in our bit showcase, newer guys that people might not have heard of, Dean Fisher is doing a really, really good job. He builds buckles and I think he does some jewelry, but more cow horse style bits. There's a guy named Matt Smith who a lot of people didn't know. He does a great job. Ryan Looper's been around for a long time. He built a phenomenal bit in our showcase. Paul David Ritchie, he lives pretty close to us here. He does a great job on spurs and bits. There's tons of guys.
Yeah, those are the cool ones, I think, because you always got to, you know, keep your hand a little bit on what's established, and then you also got to keep your hand a little bit on what's coming up.
I spend a lot of time looking for new makers and trying to find guys that I can get in with before they're super expensive or established.
Yeah. Okay. And then what's a couple of things that you've had to, one of your biggest obstacles that you had to overcome while you were growing your business, specifically in the horse industry?
Oh, for me, it's just been like brand recognition was a tough one in the beginning. So we'd go places, let's just say like AQHA, Versatility World Show. People would come from Nebraska and they'd be like, oh, Saddle House, we've never heard of y'all. And I'm like, well, do you have Facebook? Because we're all over it. But that was a struggle in the beginning. We don't really get that anymore. Now it's just keeping up with the demand. You know, like now that all the makers are on Facebook, it's kind of a struggle to be able to get enough inventory from those guys because they can sell it pretty easily on Facebook themselves without me. But we do offer a unique deal for them to where we can get their stuff in front of tons of eyeballs and the right people. So just for me today is getting enough good inventory that I want to have. That's the biggest struggle.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people forget, specifically in the horse industry, it's a lot of old school mentality. Like it's a lot of, you've got ranchers, you've got guys, you've got even women that don't really get on social media. And so the only way to see them or advertise to them or market to them is to be in their face. So, Right. You know, I mean, COVID kind of heightened the fact that you can sell things on Facebook without thinking about the back burner. Okay, well, how did businesses survive pre-Facebook, you know? Door to door, like straight old school door to door knocking and selling. Like, I mean, I had to do that. I've done that before. It's good. I don't think some people understand how good you got it to put something on Facebook and get some leads just like that versus, okay, well, how about you go up to this door and see if they don't pull a gun out on you or something like that, you know?
That's what, when I lost my Facebook, it was real, like, I was legitimately depressed for a long time.
I bet so.
the money did not flow in like it did before. Like, I had a pretty good size Facebook following and everything we did was on that, and when I lost that, like, I couldn't sell anything to save my life for a minute. If we weren't at a horse show, there wasn't money coming in.
It sucks that there's not enough legislation for that, because Facebook or social media platforms are basically, under a certain law, they can say, we have nothing to do with it. Just like defamation, and just like running like people through the mud on the internet, Facebook, even though they're the platform, or Instagram or TikTok or whatever, they can go, hey, look, we're not liable for this. And it sucks, because a lot of people make their living off of Facebook, strictly internet. I mean, I'm sure you could. If you sat down right now and never went to another show, you could probably still make a living off of Facebook. A lot of people could. And it sucks, because there needs to be more legislation for that, even losing your account. Like, there went your livelihood. They just go, okay, well, there's nothing we can do about it. But hopefully, as it progresses, especially with the whole TikTok ordeal, you know, and that happening, people think that it doesn't matter. But it does, because just like you losing your account, that sucks. You literally can do nothing when you should be able to do something. You should have some type of recourse.
Right, right. So it was a struggle. It happened to a friend of mine a year or two before it happened to me, and ever since then it had been like my biggest fear, and it sure enough happened one day.
I can imagine, dude, like, that would suck big time to have to go through that. Now, as far, you said you have a family, so your children, I'm assuming you're going to slap them on a horse if they're not already on one, right?
I've been trying. So my kids are 8 and 5 now, and my little boy, he's not little anymore, but we got him a pony when he was 2 or 3, and he was ate up with it, and I drug him around everywhere on that pony, and he's kind of grown out of it. He still loves his pony. He won't let us get rid of her. But he's finally strong enough to pull her around. She was a tough little pony. But, and then my daughter, she loves it. She'll ride with me as often as she can. She still likes to ride with dad and have me, steer and stuff like that. But she's pretty talented and capable. She just still likes dad taking care of her.
Yeah. It's like, why do they slap ponies on kids? That's the worst. I mean, you can get a good pony, but my pony was pretty good, but there are some ponies out there that are hellions. Like, you're like,
no, wow. She was a good pony. The worst thing she would do is just stand still and not move for him. Yeah. But
now,
she was great.
What are your personal show goals? Are you?
You know, so I've actually been looking for another horse, like this past week and stuff. I've been horse hunting again. I've got like a good old faithful horse. He's just not quite enough to go win every time I'm going somewhere. But he's still my favorite thing to just get out and ride. My kids can ride him.
Yeah.
You know, he's just one that I'll have forever. And I've got another project in training, but I just like doing the cow horse. And then I'll go to the versatility stock horse of Texas, stuff like that too. So that's what I enjoy. But it's kind of, business is first, family, or I shouldn't say that. I take that back. Family first, business.
I know what you meant. And then I know what you meant.
So it's not a priority like it used to be.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, business is probably first for me, and only because you can't take care of your family without the business. So, I mean, you know, you have to make a living to be able to take care of those things and do those things. So I totally understand what you're saying. But, I guess as far as personal goals, do you think that the shows have died down a little bit from when you first started going versus now, or do you think they've stayed pretty level as far as being a vendor?
Man, for us, it's been, I mean, steady, steady growth ever since we first started. And now every time I have a major in Fort Worth, it's our best show ever, or it's close to it. But I'm taking so much more stuff than I used to, and everything we take is more expensive than we used to. And so it's growing a lot, but we've got a really good reputation for people being able to come to us and know it's going to be quality. You know, like, I don't try to sell the cheapest stuff, but they know it's going to be the best stuff when they come to get stuff from us. So it's definitely growing. I don't see it slowing down anytime soon, hopefully.
No, I meant like not you, your business. I meant the actual people that
showing. No, it's so much harder now than it used to be when I was younger. Like, you could be pretty average and sneak in there and go win some prizes or some checks when I was younger. But now it's just so competitive. There's so many good horses, and so many good riders. It's tough down here to get shown, unless you're really well mounted or you're working really hard at it.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, I was talking to somebody about the shows on the East Coast or even California is nothing compared to Texas. It's like the shows there are a completely different level of competition. So, you know, you think you could be killing it out here at a show and you're just doing well. Then you hop into Texas and you come in like all the way at the bottom. Like it's a whole nother ball game out there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
No, I was going to say what I used to be able to buy a horse for 5 years ago and be able to go win or be competitive, you wouldn't dream of showing something for that price these days anymore. Like,
okay, so I need to ask you this question. Do you call it a Basel or a Bozell?
I say Bozell.
Which one's proper?
That's a good question.
It really is.
I don't hear many people say Basel.
I said Basel my whole life. I've shown in quite a couple of them, actually.
Yeah, so I normally just say Hackamore, which... it's a regional thing if you call something Hackamore or Bozell.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, the Hackamore could be something bigger than, like, a 5/8 or a 3/4-inch Bozell. Or Hackamore could be the Bozell plus the rope. You would consider that whole rig a Hackamore.
I haven't heard it called a Hackamore before, but I have heard two different Bozell. I guess, you know, tomato, tomato. It is what it is. I just thought it'd be funny to ask that and what's the correct term. Just like Teton. I've been calling it Teton Ridge for like the past 4 years. And then we talked to Connie Stoney and she said it's Teton. And I'm like, are you serious right now? She goes, yeah. She goes, it's the actual place. And I was like,
yep.
Way to go. But they do have a lot going on. PBR actually just got bought by the people that own like MMA.
Really? Yeah, I think Teton bought Cowboy Channel is what they were telling me, too.
Cowboys and Indians. They've had the Cow... I think it's Cowboy Channel, Cowboys and Indians. They've had that. No, we're talking about completely separate. The PBR was bought out by another company that kind of handles the MMA, which is going to be, like... that's going to be a huge shift as far as the industry... That part of the industry is concerned, because it's really going to up it to...
Yeah. No, that's exciting. All that stuff I feel like is really exciting, good for the growth of everything.
Yeah. Now, last thing, do you only stick to just tack or do you guys do apparel too? Do you guys sell like everything across? Like, could somebody come in and start off with everything they need or?
So I did boots for a very brief minute and it was fun while we had all the sizes and everything, but toting around tons of boots.
He said no.
Oh my gosh, it was. You know, and my dad, he told me, he's like, you don't want to do that. And I'm like, I can do it. I thought I was killing it, you know. So we did it for a little while. We sold a bunch, but I still have probably 20 pairs of odd sizes that I need to get rid of. And we have like some Saddle House branded performance type shirts that a lot of people like showing in, or they're kind of like a fishing shirt. And then a lot of like swag t-shirts. Like down here, everybody wears like the long sleeve fishing shirts, quick dry shirts. So
yeah,
have stuff like that. We do lots of hats. We did some pullovers for a while.
Do you do cowboy hats too? No,
I don't do Western wear. I thought about doing cowboy hats, but I don't do hats, but we do sell tons and tons of chaps.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah. That's totally cool. I couldn't imagine getting into the whole hat ordeal, 'cause that's a lot. And then the sizes and everything. Yeah. Forget that. What's your number one seller?
Saddles probably. I would say saddle blankets, chaps would be the biggest things that we sell.
Yeah, so you pretty much started with the saddle and then just expanded out to there.
Right.
Very cool. And then what's your favorite show that you've gone to?
I like Run for the Million, but I can only handle Vegas for 2 or 3 days and then I'm ready to go. I love going to Arizona for the Ranch Cow Horse Derby. But I think my favorites are always probably the World's Greatest Horseman in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
That and the Snap.
Is that worth setting up, the amount of money?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember watching a TikTok where Fallon Taylor broke down how much it costs to set up versus this place and this place. Is it worth it? Is it not worth it? Because sometimes it's not worth it. Versus some places that are definitely worth it, you know, even if.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting to kind of figure that out. Because some of them places are a hefty price to have, even like the NFR. I think that's the one she was talking about, the NFR, where X amount of money it costs to set up and the money that you end up spending, people to come in and help, sales associates, all that kind of stuff, you know. It's a lot. It's a whole lot.
Yeah. NFR is not a cheap one. We did it during COVID. We did it during COVID when they moved it to Fort Worth that year.
Yeah.
And it was good. It would have been better in Vegas, but by the time NFR rolls around, our whole team is wore out because we've been on the road for 6 or 8 weeks at that point. And so we normally don't do NFR, but like going to Vegas for Run for the Million, that's not a cheap one, but it's good for us because we don't get in front of a lot of those people very often.
Yeah.
But some of those other shows that aren't great, we'll do them just to get in front of new eyes, to see new people, and then get the exposure.
Yeah, yeah, because it costs a lot of money. I think it was, she's a purse maker. Well, she makes bags. Crap, I can't think of the name right now. But she broke down, like, she showed everybody what it costs to rent the booth, how much she spent, and what she made, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes, like you said, it's just worth it because you actually meet people. Then you can get online and you can establish a relationship with them or whatever. I was going to ask you one more other thing as far as you went to the NFR. You said it just a minute ago, the world's greatest horseman, I think. Do you think the attendance at these events have gone down?
Not at all. It's sold out. Like, just for the cow horse. Like, the cow horse and the reining in particular have grown so much in the last couple of years, and then the ranch classes too. I don't know if there's any events that have sold out tickets for the ranch stuff yet, but it wouldn't surprise me as they get more money involved in those events. But like, if you try getting World's Greatest Horseman tickets or Run for the Million tickets, they sell out very quick.
Yeah. So the attendance hasn't changed, even though the economics of it have gone down?
Honestly, I'm not seeing that much of a downtick in the economics for the cow horse. If anything, there's a lot more people involved. But no, I think the ticket sales for those two shows stays really strong and has been.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. If you picked up what you have right now and brought it to North Carolina, you would not survive. And that's nothing against you. That's nothing against you. It's just like out here, a big jackpot for us out here, 75 people, maybe 100. You're lucky to get that. They're not going to spend the money because they don't have it. It's not a priority out here. It's not what it is. Now, jackpot in Texas, there's one that's going to go on today. He's got 450 people coming.
Yeah, I had a friend had a memorial jackpot, a memorial team roping last week and had 700 teams, and that was at her house.
You will not see that out here, ever. You would never see that out here. So it is the economics of it, which is a good thing for you. It's a great thing, you know. I'm not saying that personal. It would be me too. So, you know, I think the industry is going to have some bumps in the road that nobody wants to seem to talk about, and those bumps are going to come hard. They're already coming now. Even if you are kind of up here, you got to have this little guy to get you up there.
Yeah, I think like here in Texas, there's so many different levels and places to play for everybody. So, you know, like there's open shows, there's little local ranch horse shows. The bigger ranch horse shows, you know, on up to whatever level, AQHA World Show or NRCHA World Show, you know, so there's a place for everybody to play.